What's wrong with the world, mama?
People living like they ain't got no mama.
Now you real loud.
Really? Dang.
What's wrong with the world, mama? People living like they ain't got no mamas.
What's wrong with the world, mama? We're living like they ain't got no
mama. This is Dylan.
This is Nick. And you're listening to
Colloquium,
What's wrong with the world?
I knew you were going to say that. Do you want me to repeat what the Black Eyed Peas
You can say it in your own words if you want.
Yeah, in my own words?
Yeah.
Okay. People living like they ain't got no mama.
Like what?
Like they ain't got no mama.
Like they ain't got no mama. Thanks, Will.i.am and Fergie. Good. What would Chesterton say to that question?
It would be the same thing, just probably more poetic. Mother, what's wrong with the world, you know?
You know what Chesterton said to that question, right?
No, what did he say?
That we
talked about. Yeah, he said, I am.
Mm-hmm.
Will, yeah, I
you
am.
Are. Wait, hang on, that's deep. Will, I am. Answered the question, what's wrong with the world, as did G.K. Chesterton.
Ah, yes.
And they both have I am involved in that. Gotcha. Somehow.
Yeah, you know, when I was a teacher at Grissom, I also was an assistant coach for the soccer team, and the head soccer coach would do like this weekly quote with the guys before practice on Monday, and you know, there would be a theme that we would, you know, discuss throughout the week, and I got to pick one week, and that's the quote that I picked. I am.
Oh, and then did you have to explain it?
Yeah, I explained kind of what went on.
That's beautiful.
And it was a cool memory that I have because we were about to play the game that week that we had on the schedule, and we were all circled around about the players are about to go onto the field, and the coach asked, everybody remember the quote from the week? And like everybody at once said, like, all it was, I am, whatever. It was really cool. I kind of awesome. Remember.
This was college?
It was in high school.
High school.
Yeah. I was an assistant coach for Grissom. Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah. I remember that being a memorable experience that year. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I had a professor in college. It was a business communications class, which this is going to be a good segue into our topic. But I had a professor who, you had to get participation points for throughout the semester in class, and you could do various different things. They're actually cool things. Like one of them was write a thank you note for a job interview or something like that. But one of the opportunities was you could write a quote on the board at the beginning of class. And we would spend like the first 5-10 minutes of every class going through those like leadership quotes that we'd write on the board. I've always wanted to do that in the classroom myself. Never really have done that, but I thought it was really cool. It was just like kind of begin with inspiring quotes and kind of engaged everybody in a really cool way.
That's really cool. Quotes are very interesting how they influence people. I came across a book once that was about the impact of quotes across history.
Whoa.
Which I thought was really interesting. Yeah, it was something to that effect.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so we get to read one day.
Yeah, I'd love to read that.
Yeah.
So now I got to make this segue, huh?
That's right. Oops.
So college, I mentioned that I had a professor in college because I went to college.
Yeah. College.
You might be able to guess what our topic's going
to be. College?
Yeah. We might have said it five or six times in the last 20 seconds. But it's really just the question of, I mean, I think the way we posed it here is college worth it? A provocative question. I think an important question. I think a difficult question to answer. I think, I don't ultimately know where we're going to land. Well, I have an idea, but it's kind of one of those questions I think we're going to flesh through as we talk about it, and it'll be fun to see where we land.
Yeah. Agreed.
I think the background with this, too, is I think this is a relevant topic. I mean, you probably saw in the news, the tuition, debt.
Yep.
What is it called? Debt cancellation.
Debt forgiveness, yeah.
But college is expensive. It's expensive as ever. A lot of people went into debt to go to college in our generation, and hence the debt forgiveness, which is a topic in and of itself. But I think with rising tuition costs, very much so rising tuition costs, the value of a college degree deflating as more and more people get them, and probably a number of other factors seem to make degrees less valuable than maybe they once were. The ineffectiveness of many degrees at leading to employment, I can talk from some personal experience on that, but I think it's clear that there's some majors that very clearly lead to good jobs and some that don't. I think because of all these things, many are beginning, many in our generation, millennials and probably Gen Z as well, are beginning to question the value of a college degree. Have you seen that?
I think so. I mean, I am involved with young people also as a coach, and you know, I guess in their minds, they're going to college. Like, I don't, you know, like, I don't see them questioning about whether or not they want to go.
I guess where I see it is not so much in high school kids today, is in people our age, in their 20s,
right,
who maybe have gone to school and taken out a lot of debt to do it, and now they're thinking, ooh, was this really worth all of this debt?
Good point. I think that's significant to think about, too, though, because it's people that have already been to college that are the ones seriously considering the value of college. You know, I still think that, that an important factor in our society is the image of college and what it provides to young people particularly.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's ultimately what's going to drive how many people attend college in the future, you know, what the image is.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. And I guess what I mean by that way is this idea that you're alluding to is that everyone in high school, at least in most places, everyone's a generalization, because I certainly think there are still people in high school who know. Oh, I know. I've known people like this who college isn't on the table because their family didn't go to college, they don't have the money for college, et cetera, et cetera. But for most middle-class people in high school, it's just a given, right?
You're going,
you're looking forward to it, it's supposed to be fun, it's supposed to be a lot of different things, prepare you for the real world, all these things. Everybody looks forward to it, and that's a given. I think maybe a point that I will make in over the course of this conversation is that it could be structured differently.
Yeah.
But maybe we'll get into that as we go.
Sounds good.
So I think we wanted to frame this conversation a little bit around our friend John Henry Cardinal Newman. Never understood why the cardinal goes after before the last name.
Like, me either.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
it goes after the first name. It's not probably Cardinal John Henry Newman. It's John Henry Cardinal Newman.
Yeah.
But it does.
Like all things in our church, well, most all things, it probably has a really there's probably a really profound reason why it's in the middle.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, what I think of first is like, you know, like doctor, like if you call somebody Dr. So-and-so, like my brother, Dr. Jed Levesque, because he's, you know, PhD, or my dad and mom. I've got a few doctorates anyway, in the family. I don't have a few doctorates. I should have.
Wait, your mom and your dad both have doctorates?
My mom, my dad, and my brother PJ both
Holy
have doctorates.
Smokes.
And I am not the least educated member of my family, because I have a master's degree. My other brother only has a bachelor's.
Throw that in there.
But he's far more successful seriously, but he's in his field than I am.
He's just a big-time statistician, right?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So anyway, the one with the bachelor's degree is very successful. Anyway, where was I going?
Purpose of a university, John Henry Newman.
Yes. I think the reason why it's Cardinal Newman is just like the reason why you wouldn't say doctor and then somebody's first name. It's like a professional title. You tie it with the last name.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
That's my best explanation.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
But anyway, the reason we bring up John Henry Cardinal Newman is that he wrote a book, I think a very lengthy book, called The Idea of a University, about just that, the idea of a university. And we read a book, we read an article that we're going to shape our discussion around a little bit. It's an article from Avery Cardinal Doles, not Cardinal Avery Doles, as I put on the Google Doc. Avery Cardinal Doles, something like that. Who is? I think he was an Archbishop of D.C.
Okay,
And he passed. I could be wrong on that, but he is an American Archbishop. Passed away within the last 10-20 years. But he wrote an article that was. It's on the Cardinal Newman's organization website. And it basically summarizes Newman's article and talks about kind of his four kind of issues with the modern education system, or four issues that can make a university go awry. And I think we wanted to shape our conversation around those four things.
Yeah, that's right. You might have to help me with a summary of these four, but
that's fine.
The first one, yeah, no worries. I think it's interesting that we are going to frame the conversation in light of what the universities have as flaws.
Right.
So I think maybe we should challenge ourselves to come up with some appropriate purposes of the university, yeah, over the course of this conversation.
Sure.
But I think it's really helpful to talk about what the fragments of the university are nowadays as a starting point. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually just one. Maybe we can start with that one. Fragmentation.
Aha. Jump to that one.
Is one of his points. And so what I think he means by this is that all of the disciplines, all of the subject matters have become divided, right? So there's not a unity. There's not an interdisciplinary approach in the universities at times. So that means that I think this follows from another one of his points, which is utilitarianism. But you know, it's basically, you know, utilitarianism, which maybe we're covering two here, mm-hmm, is the idea that, you know, you study something because it's going to fulfill some end of getting you a job,
right?
You study something solely because it's a skill you're going to need to do a certain task,
right?
And I think in a lot of ways, all education in the modern world has taken on this approach, all public education at least. And I think a result of this is also fragmentation, right? As if I study math in order to do math skills to equip me for this job, well, then all of a sudden, the ways that other subjects might interact with my math skills and understanding of math becomes less important, mm-hmm, because it doesn't help me to necessarily, or at least I can't see how it would directly help me to master those particular skills that I need.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a hard one. You know, this becomes a really complicated conversation really quickly, I think, because you can see how someone who wants to be a mathematician would just want to do math classes when they're in college. You know, I mean, that's what they would want to pay for. I mean, that's definitely, you know, what we're talking about there is like, essentially going to trade school, you know, to be a mathematician or whatever. Like, so it's hard to say that using classes for the purpose of getting a job is the wrong thing to do. You know, like that's clearly not what John Henry Newman is saying here. But I think what he's saying is, you know, the holistic idea of a university should not be for the purpose of going there to get some quote-unquote use out of it, you know, to get some professional use out of it.
So Newman would say, as many in the Catholic tradition would say, is that the problem is that the end is wrong, right? The goal, the telos is wrong. And the goal of an education, of a college education, a university education for Newman is not to get the degree to get a job. It's to train yourself in a way of thinking, a way of being, the intellectual life, right? And he would say that this, the act of studying, of learning, of cultivating good habits of mind, is a good thing in and of itself.
Word, yeah.
And I don't think that he, you know, even though those are the types of things he would say, I don't think that he would say that there's no place for any kind of utilitarian thinking in education.
Yeah.
And I certainly wouldn't. As an educator myself, I think that there's certainly a place for, go get a skill that's going to help you get a job. Absolutely. That's part of the educational process. But I think the issue comes when you reduce the educational process to skills that get us jobs and don't ask the bigger questions. I think ultimately the solution too involves some combination of both knowledge for its own sake, wisdom for its own sake, learning for its own sake, and a pragmatic approach of if you're paying money, if you're paying good money to get a degree, is it going to result in you making the money to pay that off, or to, mm-hmm. to you know, making more than the money you spent on it, right? Is it going to be a worthwhile investment? And yeah, I think ultimately that's where I'm at, is you don't throw out any utilitarian thinking, but we don't want to reduce education to utilitarian or fragmented thinking.
Yeah, that's really good. It's really good. Yeah, what's the purpose of the university? Yeah, I love this quote John Henry Newman here. He calls the purpose, you know, the special fruit of the university education, is, I'm quoting this article here. John Henry Newman says it's the philosophical habit of mind. I love that. I love that. Developing the habit for philosophy, which is love of wisdom.
Right. Love of wisdom involves questioning, asking the most important questions in life. All disciplines should be engaged in that on some level, right? Asking the right important questions.
Yeah.
Whether you're a scientist, a mathematician, a theologian, a philosopher, right? We should be concerned with the most important questions.
Amen. Yeah. Another quote from Newman, strengthen, refine, and enrich the intellectual powers. It's really dramatic. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. This is something I could see my brother PJ really getting behind, of like the, you know, he's talked about the virtue of mathematics, or the virtue that comes from disciplining your mind.
Yeah.
Right. In a field of study.
Strengthening that muscle. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. It's beautiful. Great. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, we're on utilitarianism, I think. Yeah.
And just fragmentation. How that, we kind of lumped them together here.
Yeah. Fragmentation. I just want to stick with this one for a second, because it is, and I want to jump to the high school for a second. Because I think this is where it's most prominent, is in our public education system, you know, below the university. You know, in high school, I felt this viscerally, like, you know, literally the social, there was like a history portion of our school physically. And then if you wanted to go to English class, you'd walk down the hall and go, we called them pods. You would go to the English pod, and then if you wanted to go to math class, you'd walk down the hall and up the stairs and go to the math pod.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, it was fragmented.
Yeah. I remember the pods of Virgil I. Grissom High
that's
School.
That's right. Yeah. Anyway, those were the days. But yeah, so, and there was absolutely no crosstalk between the subjects whatsoever. I mean,
yeah.
I don't even know if a lot of the teachers knew each other's names.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in pods, if a math teacher wants to go talk to a science teacher, right? They have to go to a different section of the school. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. And there was no, I guess, overarching vision for the school and what the purpose of the institution was, other than some generic things about, you know, developing young people or whatever, you know?
Right.
You know, at least, I'll say this, at least some schools frame their education as college prep.
Right.
You know, I mean, at least we're naming it. Yeah. But just for these like fragmented education classes are, I think, a huge issue in our education system.
Gosh, you bring up a lot there. I think outside of the college prep label, I think that there seems to be a lack of direction sometimes at this secondary level. And, you know, I'm blessed to teach at a Catholic school with a clear mission, right? Mm-hmm. And to be able to articulate that mission well, and that's a blessing, right? But that's not the norm. And when I look at, I don't know, when I even see, you know, teachers or administrators, and you look at the vision of your generic public school, it's just unimpressive. There doesn't seem to be much there, other than like college prep is the only really label you can put on it. Or making a difference in the lives of young people. Like I always found it as interesting. It's like, I want to make a difference. I want to make a difference. It's like, okay, you can make a good difference or a bad difference. What do you see as making a difference? What is the good that you're after? And sometimes I fear that educators don't have a clear vision.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I remember distinctly when I was teaching math at Grissom, actually, I did that for 1 year. But one of the students asked me one time, I was trying to help him with a math problem, and he was struggling with it. And I told him not to use their calculator specifically, and I walked by, and there he is using his calculator.
Yeah.
But I'm like, listen, you know, I want you to understand how to do this problem without the calculator. You know, and he was like, why? Most people, you know, are doing things on the calculator anyways.
Right.
And I didn't have a response for him. Like, I couldn't answer him. You know, I didn't have the vision as a teacher – as to why I was teaching mathematics by hand and developing that skill in their minds.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was still, in my mind as a teacher, it was still so that they can learn math for their jobs or for practical purposes or whatever.
Yeah.
So that was an example of what I remember not having the vision for.
I remember being in high school, and I know we're supposed to be talking about college here, but I remember being in high school, middle school even, you know, all growing up, it's so common for a student to ask the question, why do we need to know this, right? And most of the time, I would hear teachers respond with, oh, because you'll need it in a job. And then you might push back, well, what if I do this? Then I don't need that. And it's like, oh, well, you just need it, right? But teachers who have no vision, right? And that's why when I actually respond as a teacher, I kind of take a different approach. You know, I might say that at times, like, yeah, this is a valuable skill that you'll need in the workplace. I teach a career preparedness class, and I say that. But it's also, I'll also say, this is a valuable thing to know regardless of whether you use it in your job or not. And I think an approach like that, a vision like that, again, it doesn't abandon any utilitarian thinking of, yeah, there are skills you need to know and you should learn those. But I think that approach is just more honest and more helpful for students.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. All these things apply to the college, to most colleges, I think, by the way. You know, just we have a lot of experience in the high schools.
I was like, how are we going to rescue this conversation?
No, I think all of these things apply. I think it's just I think it's just more easily seen this issue in the high school because it's basically in one building. You know, it's just easy to see it.
Yeah.
But still, the fragmentation. And I will say, too, like, if you're a part of a fragmented university, and I have a math degree, so I was in the math building a lot of doing math classes. And let's say I had an English class that I had to take for core, and I didn't like English. You know, and we're reading all these amazing books, but I didn't really like it. It didn't really just come to me, and I didn't really like it. I didn't really like writing papers, and there was no vision for why I was doing this. Think about how much that destroys learning.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this destroys the love of learning. Like, I'm doing math. I go to this English class that I'm required to take. There's no vision for why I have to take it other than, you know, it's just nice to read nice books.
Yeah.
I'm not enjoying it. It just destroys my desire to do that later in life, to grow as a human being, to read these great works, to, you know, be a good writer, to develop as a human being the way God created me to be. It just destroys that. You know, it's very damaging.
Yeah. And I guess that's just, you know, the word vision keeps coming up for me. And I think that's one of the problems with utilitarianism as an approach to education is that it seems to weaken your vision. Because if you don't have a strong understanding of its utilitarian purpose, then it all of a sudden becomes useless in a strictly utilitarian framework. And so, yeah, I guess that's just one of the features, one of the effects of this approach, where a college degree is primarily solely to get you a job, is the second it doesn't, it becomes useless. Whereas in an approach that sees learning as something more than that, it doesn't necessarily, each skill you learn doesn't have to have a clear, direct necessity in a utilitarian standpoint to get you a job, right? If it doesn't, if it isn't a skill that's absolutely essential to the job you're going to get when you graduate, that's okay if your vision is broader than that.
Amen.
Well, we better move on.
Let's do it.
So secularism is the next one, which I think would be a clear one. You know, Newman's writing in the 20th century. You know, his idea of a university, just like the medieval university, is going to have actually theology at the center. It's going to be one steeped in the study of God. So this is something that was important for Newman as well. But I think, unfortunately, secularism is very prominent in the university.
Yeah. Gosh, what a horrible, horrible issue in our society. People living like they ain't got no mamas.
There you go. You brought it back. Nice.
So I don't have much to say on this except when we develop, let's say we have an appropriate university that has an appropriate vision developing the philosophical habit of mind, as John Henry Newman said, that by virtue of developing that philosophical mind leads to God. You know, our desire for wisdom can't help but lead to God. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, it would be obvious in that type of university that that would lead to a theological sort of education. You know,
yeah.
It stops short if you have a philosophy loving university that doesn't have theology.
So. Yeah. Well, and I think what I found is that something about having theology and philosophy as a core part of a university, and I've seen this in certain universities, I think to a certain extent my own university being a Christian university was that. I think one of the things it can do is it actually sparks a great general love for learning amongst the students. I was having this discussion actually recently amongst some colleagues, and you know, we were going down to a conference at McGill Tulane and Mobile, and three of us, you know, have theology degrees. Three of the four of us who were going to this conference, and two of them, I'm the only one of the three of us that teaches theology. And I guess one of the kind of realizations we had and things we discussed is that people who are interested in theology tend to be interested in a lot of things. And this is true to my experience. People,
it's really
theologians that I know, people who are interested in theology are also very, very interested in the sciences, in mathematics, in the humanities, in English and history as well. I think there's something about keeping the study of God. You know, a professor of mine said that if you are interested in the study of God, then you're interested in the study of everything he created. So you're necessarily interested in every discipline if you're a theologian.
Yeah. Ooh, that's really good. Yeah. I like that a lot.
I guess Newman, worth quoting before we move on to the next point. So actually this is from Cardinal Dulles in his article. The absence of theology, he says, Newman contended, would throw the other branches of knowledge out of balance.
Yeah,
which I think is also true. There's a balancing force to philosophical and theological study.
Agree. Yeah, that's right. That's interesting. I prefer to think of it in my mind, at least, as the end point of all areas of knowledge. But yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And then our fourth point that we better touch on so we can keep going, progress this conversation along, is rationalism. What do you think about this?
Rationalism. Help me understand what this is. Can you give a formal definition? I don't know that I can summarize based on what I've read.
I don't remember what I read in the article. What I think of as rationalism is a reduction of learning of knowledge to things that we can rationally comprehend.
Right.
So okay. Where I see rationalism is where you're only interested in things you can prove, only interested in deductive, you know, type thinking. And there's an absence of mystery. There's an absence of other modes of knowledge that aren't necessarily this kind of deductive, logical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So I put here, you know, wonder and awe. Awe is to philosophy and theology what precision is to mathematics. So in philosophy, that thing, that love of wisdom and theology, awe is important, right? And I think even theology, even philosophy can be over-rationalized. We have to keep wonder and awe in the educational process. I think even in very strictly rational disciplines is something I see my brother's very good at.
Yeah.
It just being in awe of the beauty of mathematics.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I wonder if like the testing / competition format sort of destroys our ability to have wonder and awe in the classrooms in some way. I remember, and I know that there's a lot of students at the university who have a lot of pressure to perform, like to get the grade on the test or to, beat the student to their right in some project, or else, you know, they're not going to be the one that gets the job. You know, whatever it is, like there's just a competition-oriented, testing-oriented sort of atmosphere that's associated with utilitarianism, I think.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that destroys our ability to have this, you know, more learning-oriented, awe-oriented sort of education that is going to help us actually develop as human beings and grow closer to God, just because it's about that I've got to get this grade, I've got to get that grade, I've got, you know, I've got to get this job or else, you know. So I guess I don't know if that relates to rationalism, but definitely when you said wonder and awe, I was thinking that that sort of testing environment would eliminate that.
Yeah, I think I see students struggle with this in the sense that, kind of like you're saying, with that test taking mentality. Well, standardized test, right? There is one correct answer. Mm-hmm. Is A, B, C, or D. You either have it right or you don't. And I think because of that approach that is in so much of a part of their education, they get to something like an essay or a short answer question, and they want, and it might be a broad question, like something I might ask them, like, you know, how should a Catholic interpret Genesis?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the creation stories. And they go, oh, what's the right answer? Like, I'll be preparing for a test with them. And they want to know exactly what they should put to get the question right. When the point of this kind of thinking, this kind of a question, is I want you to think about this critically and express it in your own words in an accurate way. And there is not one right way to do that. There are a lot of wrong ways to do it. Like, you can be wrong on it. It's not, there's subjectivity to it, but not such that every answer is right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the kind of question in which the answer is D and I'm going to give you the answer and then you just regurgitate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they struggle with that. And I think that has to do with this as well, is they're trained in this kind of, I think, overly black and white way of thinking, maybe.
Yeah. Again, it just destroys philosophical habits. We're really struggling with that word today.
Yeah, I don't know why. It should be an easy word.
Philosophy.
So can I tell one story on this point? I don't know if we intend to spend this long on the four.
Nah, this is great. 6 weeks,
but... so this is a story I heard recently from a retired theologian that I, you know, have heard, I listened to some of his videos. Dr. Larry Chapp is his name. He went to seminary for a while. And he said when he was in seminary, he went to his first spiritual direction with a new spiritual director. And the spiritual director sat down at a piano and played this beautiful, like, I don't know if it's Mozart or what, just played this beautiful piece. And said, okay, that's it for spiritual direction. And he was like, what? Aren't you going to give me spiritual direction? He goes, no, you idiot. That was spiritual direction. Go. And he left. And that was his first spiritual direction meeting, which is listening to Mozart. But his point there was that, like, I think this rationalism is the opposite of that, right? Is wanting an answer right away and not being... wanting things to be perfectly understood, right? To be able to understand and answer every question that comes to our mind versus, you know, what do we see with a beautiful piece of classical music is sometimes it's not about answering questions. It's about allowing ourselves to enter into a space of wonder and awe, which stimulates the intellectual process, which is good in and of itself. But it isn't about just having an answer that you can understand in the moment.
It's really good. And also that leads to God.
You know? Right.
It does. It definitely the rationalist sort of thing that you were talking about definitely seems to almost cut off our ability to rise our minds and hearts to God with wonder and awe.
Yeah. I think honestly, Nick, this is something I struggle with a lot. Like as someone who's studied theology at the graduate level, one of the aspects of theology is trying to use your reason to understand God and his revelation. And one of the things I found is that it's very easy to, if you're trying to use your reason to fully comprehend God, you're going to fall short, right?
Yeah.
So it's very easy to get like stuck in this just over-rational way of thinking about things and to forget to listen to Mozart, right? To forget the reasons, forget the faith, religion, that our faith is ultimately a relationship, a love affair, right? And it's not a systematic proof of who God is and why. So that's something I struggle with. I think being trained in this, trying to make use reason to understand the faith, is it's very limited at times.
Yeah.
Great. So in the university, we need, you know, we need reason. We need rational thinking. We can't reduce our studies to rational thinking, to rationalism, I guess.
Rationality.
Yeah.
Scientism is one of the words that Bishop Barron likes to use.
He does like to use that one.
Yeah.
Which means basically making science a god, and rationalism would be making reason a god.
Right.
Right. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about our personal experience with college and what has and has not been helpful about it, and hopefully we can work our way to a conclusion on this question, is college worth it?
Yeah. Great. I'll start out with actually a positive thing that I got from college.
And actually.
I know we've talked about some things that are negative about most universities. But I went to Spring Hill College. It's a Jesuit school, so Catholic. And we were required to take, was it 9 hours of philosophy and 9 hours of theology, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And the first class that I took for philosophy was my very first semester, my freshman year. It was Logic 101, Introductory Logic. So it was a course on, you know, building proofs and the different logical arguments and so on and so forth. And I remember that class was maybe the most meaningful class that I have ever had. I just remember learning how to think, basically.
Yeah.
How to form arguments, how to reason from point A to point B to point C. It sounds easy and silly, but for me, that was a very enlightening and eye-opening experience of how to use my mind to come to conclusions and to think about things properly. So I'll say that is one thing that I took from college that I will always be grateful for. And that, in my mind, fits in perfectly into John Henry Newman's vision for a university, you know, developing the philosophical habit of mind, obviously. That was one thing I would say there.
I've heard you talk about that before too, and I think I agree that that's, you know, an amazing experience. I think it's also an experience that 99% or 99.9% of people don't have in their education. Even of college educated people, like, have not taken a logic class. I've even, you know, with a master's in theology, I never had a class solely on logic. And so that, I think that's maybe speaks to that a little bit, is I think there was a time where logic and philosophy was much more the norm of what you would study, regardless of your discipline at the college level.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. I taught geometry at Grissom when I taught there, and part of geometry is performing proofs on certain mathematical concepts, which are directly tied to logic principles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, we even had to learn certain logical arguments in geometry class so that the students could understand how to perform geometrical proofs. And it was so funny to me, because when I was teaching it, I was going, oh yeah, like, how are the students going to be able to understand these geometrical principles if they don't have a sense of the, you know, logical principles behind it?
That's interesting, yeah.
You know, so like, I could see the integration in my mind, even though I hadn't really developed and fleshed out my idea of what a, you know, education should look like. But you see the fragmentation right there, you know, in the high school classroom. Here we are back to the high school. But
well, I would love to talk to a geometry teacher who's maybe trained in the classical tradition. Because I'm certain, I know I talk about this in the theology classroom of, you know, when we talk about arguments for God's existence, I talk about how this is basically what you're doing in a geometry proof. And but I would love to see the other end of that, of a geometry teacher who's classically trained. How do they teach the concept of proofs with the training that they have in logic and philosophy?
Right. Yeah.
But that's also a little bit of a digression. Talking about positive experience at college. So there's a lot of negatives I want to highlight, but it's funny that I want to focus on the negatives because my college experience was absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Loved every second of it. Well, not every second. Loved a lot of it. so much. Learned so much life experience, so much, so many good times, so much suffering that I think I learned a lot from. In the classroom, just loved my classes. You know, I was in similar to, I think, probably had a similarly good education to you in the sense that I went to a school that valued the liberal arts, regardless of what your major was. So there was a common liberal arts core that you had to take. And especially for me in the honors program that I was in, we had a kind of even in a more rigorous, a more in-depth experience of the liberal arts. So that was super formative because I'm in a classroom with math majors and science majors and teachers and business majors, and we're just investigating life's greatest questions in the classroom together. And it's an ethical questions and philosophical and religious questions. It was amazing. So in a lot of ways, my college experience was a well-rounded college experience. Mm-hmm. But if I can segue a little bit into the negative, one of the things I found is that, you know, I also got a business degree, right? And one of the things I found is that graduating with a business degree put me maybe a little bit ahead of somebody who didn't have a business degree in terms of the market for business jobs. But the jobs that I was looking at and applying for out of college were paying sometimes less than the jobs in teaching and education. Granted, I think the business ultimately has a high ceiling, but I kind of get, once I started looking at jobs in business, I realized, you know, my parents paid my tuition, but there was all this money that went into something that I wasn't really seeing the immediate direct benefit of. And there's a lot to that, and there's a lot of nuances and complications, and but that was just the first time I kind of remember thinking, like, huh, I've known people who have gone into this same field without a college degree and been fine, right? And here I was, you know, and I think there are other degrees where it, you know, more directly, you know, you get the job, you get a certain salary because you have that degree. And you get that job because you have that degree. But I think it realized that even in business, which is supposed to be a very like practical, pragmatic degree, mm-hmm. That wasn't as much the case as it seemed to be made out to be.
Yeah. Ooh, a lot of fascinating things there. For one, I'm interested to see what you had to say about this because I know you said there are a lot of nuances. But for one, there is this idea in... you know, believe me, I feel this, but there is this idea, and I think we feel it from the people that are paying for our university experience, you know, our parents. It's a true pressure we feel, or maybe it's a false pressure that we put on ourselves. But, you know, we have this idea that parents pay for our education, or, you know, if your parents don't pay for your education, if you're paying for your education, I'm paying for it, and then if I don't end up getting the degree that I use every day of the week after college, then it was money wasted.
Yeah.
That's kind of the underlying message.
That's a good point, yeah.
And that seems kind of silly to me because, you know, and again, I just you know, heard you talk about how incredible your college experience was, how much you got out of it, and so on and so forth. It's like, okay, well, you know, thousands of dollars a year for college may not have borne direct fruit because of your exact major that you did, but I mean,
right?
Like, there's got to be something there that you're spending your money on that's not just the education for your degree.
And I think what you're getting at exactly there is that college, the university experience, should be more than just utilitarian,
right?
Right. There's more that goes on there that is beneficial and fruitful than the degree that gets you a job,
right? Yeah, no, I agree.
And I think it's worth a helpful caveat too. I think, you know, my parents, you know, mom could be listening at some point. So I also want to clarify this as well. But like, they made a lot of sacrifices to pay for me and my brother's college tuition. And I'm very grateful for that. Mm-hmm. I'm very grateful for that. You know, but at the same time, and I don't know that I would do it over necessarily, right? Do it differently. Sorry, that I meant to say.
Yeah.
I would probably do it over.
You would do it again.
I would do it again. But at the same time, I think that from so many sources, college was pitched as this thing. This is what's going to get you ahead in life. Mm-hmm. This is what you need to do. Because I think for prior generations, and this is where I think that college has changed in recent years, is I think for prior generations, like a lot of our parents and grandparents were first generation college grads. And for them, it did make such a huge difference.
Made all the difference in the world, yeah.
But the tuition cost wasn't what it is now. It set them apart in a way that with more and more people getting college degrees, you're not set apart with a bachelor's degree in the way that you once were. There's degree inflation going on where a bachelor's degree doesn't mean what it used to. A master's degree doesn't mean what it once did. You know, my mom had to go back for her doctorate because her field became a doctorate program. And it was just, I think it started as a bachelor's or master's program. So there's an effect in that the landscape of college education is changing. And I think we need to evaluate, again, it's more than just that utilitarian standpoint, but I think we need to evaluate what is it, what are we getting, and what is that holistic experience that we're paying for, you know, tens of thousands of dollars or more for in the college experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm good on that.
Okay.
And we didn't really touch on what we said we were going
I do want to say, I want to talk more about some of the other negatives. So yeah,
okay.
The second kind of big negative experience, and this didn't happen, I think, until a little bit later. But I realized that in college, I didn't really learn a lot of life skills. And the reason why is I didn't have a lot of responsibility. I lived in a dorm room. I had my meals handed to me on a silver platter. That's figurative, not literally.
Right.
I don't think I ate from silver platters. But, you know, you eat at a cafeteria. You don't make most of your own meals. And this is not everybody's college experience. Some people work very hard and have to pay for their own college and all that. But I think for a lot of people, it is this very, you go to class, you party a lot, you have a lot of fun, you don't have a lot of responsibilities. You know, you've got people who clean up after you sometimes. It's just, there aren't a lot of real world responsibilities. And you're at this phase, 18 to 22 or sometimes older, where that should be a lot of the process of becoming a man or a woman, right? Is learning those real life skills. And so I realized, I think a little bit later on, it's like, man, you know, how did I get to my mid-20s and not know some of these things that I think should have been a part of my experience of being 18, 19, 20 is learning some of those basic skills.
Yeah. No, that's really good.
So that was a wake-up call for me, is I think something about our college education system, and again, it's not everybody's, because some people do work and, you know, work their way through college and it's different, but I think for many, many people, it just delays maturity and delays adulthood.
It's fascinating. I tend to agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So does college help make us virtuous?
Dylan's bullet here is, I bet Nick will say no.
So what do you say, Nick?
So here's my best Catholic response. It depends. It depends. With depends being in all caps, because there are many, many, many college/universities that will certainly lean towards not helping you grow in virtue. I think that is definitely the case. But there are also, on those same universities, some incredibly influential and holy people that can lead you towards a worthwhile college experience. So a lot there. So I would say it depends, because it depends where you spend your time and who you spend your time with, I think. And also where you go to college, obviously. But I'll say that college has the ability to create very, very virtuous people.
Yeah.
I think collegiates are still at the age where, like, they can change habits and change their lives very mm-hmm. quickly if directed yeah. towards a certain path. Yeah. So, and honestly, they're on their own with the time and, you know, energy for the most part to make those changes. Yeah. So I think it's a great environment to build virtue.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, college did cultivate a lot of virtue for me. I mean, it puts you in an environment where, I mean, you're living often in very close community with others, and that's challenging, right? I remember just a lot of challenges from living with roommates that, you know, for me as a youngest child, I, you know, was in high school. I didn't really have roommates other than my parents, and I didn't have brothers to bother me, and as being the youngest child, and they were gone. And so that was a big adjustment. You know, there were a lot of big life adjustments of just figuring out being away from home and the communal life that was available, you know, especially on yeah. in colleges with, you know, we're involved with the campus ministry and there's, you know, good, vibrant ministries going on, good communal life being lived. Yeah, absolutely. It has the potential to cultivate great virtue. And I think it did in a lot of ways for me. But I think there are just ways in which I wish it could have been better. Like, I think if I had been given more responsibility and forced to figure more things out on my own, it might have been able to be better.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say that too. I mean, my college experience definitely could have been more fruitful, you know, and I realize how much I have learned and grown after college and how much I've come to understand about the Lord and about, you know, how learning and love of wisdom works, and how if I would have surrounded myself with the types of people that were going to be on that same path as me in college, how profound and amazing that experience would have been for me.
Right.
So anyway, definitely things to consider, but
yeah.
Can't go back now.
Yeah. So is this college experience something that's necessary for everyone? Must all people attend?
So no, it's not. But I'll say, you know, going to college and getting a degree for a job is, you know, fine. I mean, it's fine. You know, that's certainly necessary. I did it. But if someone is already formed as a human being prior to college, like they've already had this cultivation of the, you know, philosophical habit of mind in some sort of holistic education prior to college, where they learn how to think and they love pursuing wisdom and they love pursuing the Lord and they've kind of grown in holiness in that sense, then college, in my mind, becomes a little bit less necessary, because then maybe they can go to trade school and, you know, just you know, get a degree for the job, because they've already got that, you know, forming of the mind in place.
Right.
So, but I think for someone who's had the fragmented education, like honestly, most people in the U.S. Through the public school system, college might be a little bit more necessary so that they can have that time to actually learn how to cultivate an, you know, intellectual life.
Yeah.
That make any sense?
Yeah. Is that the reason that we might not think of? You put on the Google Doc,
yeah.
No, but not for the reason we might
think. Yeah, I was, you know, most people say, no, people don't need to attend college now because, you know, like one, like you said, the dilution of the job market, right? Everybody's got a bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
But you can just go to a trade school and do something for significantly cheaper that's good money.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why I think a lot of people say you don't need to go to college because you can just do a trade school that's cheaper.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, the reason why you maybe don't need to go to college is if you've already been formed as a human being intellectually.
Right.
That was kind of the reason why I was thinking.
Yeah. And I think trade school is something that's brought up a lot as kind of a response. Again, if we're thinking about it in this utilitarian approach, there are many, many trades in which you'll make more money and spend less money to be trained to do it than many college degrees.
Right.
Right. So it kind of becomes a situation where yeah, it does depend on what you want to do. And reality is also at 18, I didn't know what I wanted to do. So in some ways, maybe college is a good option for somebody who doesn't know for sure. Mm-hmm. But it also is a very expensive option for somebody who might major in something that isn't all that fruitful on that utilitarian playing field. Again, I know we both believe the college experience is more than that and there's valuable things there. But I think ultimately, I believe that the intellectual life is something that is valuable. You know, not that everybody's called to a high level of intellectual study, but I think that, you know, what are we saying is good about college? Well, it's the holistic formation that can be received there, and also the practical side, like it can prepare you for things, right? Those are the two kind of goods there of that college experience. Well, I guess my pushback here on this question is, okay, what if there's much easier, cheaper ways to get both the holistic formation, cultivate the love for knowledge, and to find a way to make money to provide for your family?
Yeah.
And I think there might be some, for some, and again, it's a situational thing, because if you want to be an engineer, bachelor's degree is the best thing you can do to become an engineer, right? Or if you want to be a, I don't know, what's another example of a very practical?
A cost estimator.
A cost estimator, getting a degree in math. Okay. Or is that typically where cost estimators come from, is math?
Or a teacher.
Teaching, you know, I took the back way in, but yeah, you got to have that college degree to teach.
Yeah.
Even the lower levels. So certain things, there is that, like, yeah, that is necessary. But for other things, maybe not. And if you can do it without the degree and still cultivate those habits of mind that are good for the human person, maybe it's not your path. And I think especially in the modern world, we have so many ways of cultivating these habits of mind, right? There's so many courses you can just sign up for and YouTube videos you can watch on the internet and books you can read and have access to readily. You can learn and you can cultivate. I think the one thing that's maybe missing is like a learning community, but you could have that. You could cultivate that on your own as well. You're grimacing a little bit.
Well, you know, it's just, there's so many resources to cultivate this love of learning, you know, that's necessary in a human being, but it's just, how do you instill that in someone, or how do you create the environment where that someone is going to go about this pursuit of wisdom on their own? You know, like I guess I'm thinking about, you know, a typical young person coming up in our society, going to the elementary, middle school, high school, where they're literally sitting in the desk for 8 hours, not being kids, and learning about education in a fragmented way. Yeah. And so where's the space for them to cultivate an intellectual life? You know, like where, I mean, I get it. You know, I get the idea of all these resources and like that are available outside of college, but like you've got to create the space for them to learn.
Are you kind of hinting at saying that college, one of the great things about college is that it creates that space?
College can create that space, whereas in the rest of that person's life that would be attending college, they might not have that space to develop that sort of intellectual life.
Yeah.
Sitting around with literally, in some cases, thousands of people that are the same age as them, in the same stage of life, in the same town, thinking about the same things. I mean, like, that is a powerful tool.
Yeah.
For better or worse, in a lot of times. But that's a powerful environment to breed, like, a real love of wisdom and pursuit of things that are important. So I guess I would invite whoever's thinking that they would not like to attend college to figure out how that sort of environment is going to be replaced in your life.
Yeah.
You know, because that was one thing that's so powerful.
That's a really good point. There is something really special about the college environment for that. I guess all my qualms, all my pushback against this assumption that college is necessary and for almost everyone are issues with aspects of the college experience and not the thing in and of itself. I think there's so much good there. I mean, and heck, you know, I'm an academic. Like, I love learning. Like, I would get, you know, aside from the time and money that it would cost, like, I would go get another degree for fun.
Yeah.
You know, like, just for fun. I got my master's degree in a lot of ways just because I thought it was fun to study. And that's a really nerdy thing to say. But, so yeah, I'm super pro college, and I don't know if if that was clear through this conversation, but I don't know. I guess there are just some qualms I have. And I guess I also speak on behalf of people that I've known who are not interested in, maybe they're not super intellectually gifted or not interested in, not that they're not, because I do think everyone has a certain level of contemplative and intellectual potential, you know, save for certain mental disabilities, but people who just really don't thrive in a classroom.
Yeah. Well, can you blame them? I mean, that's part of what I'm saying. You know, I think, you know, as like people that grew up in the school system and as, you know, I've taught for 1 year and you've taught for several now, like there's always a couple of students in the class that are like, I'm not going to go to college. I'm just tired of school. It's like, honestly, can you blame them? They're just sitting in the classroom, you know, thinking, learning about things that are supposed to be for this test that they don't really care that much about, honestly, about passing or not. And like, it's their love of learning is destroyed, you know? Right. So why would they expect something different in college?
Right.
A lot of times they shouldn't expect something different in college because that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that stems that sort of a lot of time. I can't project this onto everyone, but a lot of times that sort of thinking like, I'm tired of school, I don't want to go to college anymore, that stems from just this, honestly, poor education. Like they haven't cultivated, the environment that they're in has not helped them cultivate a love of wisdom.
Yeah.
A love of learning.
So ultimately, I think a big takeaway for me is that, you know, and this goes back, we kind of had a high school conversation in our classical education podcast months back, but it might be over a year back now, I don't know. But, you know, I think my big takeaway is the educational experience, whether at the college level or below, needs to improve by rediscovering, or I guess finding better ways to cultivate a love for learning.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Finding better, because other than that, we're going to be stuck in this utilitarian approach if we're not cultivating love for learning, because it just becomes this thing we do to get a job to make money.
That's right.
And that, I think that stifles the educational process, because it's so much more, even if it, you're studying for the sake of getting a job or for the sake of getting a degree or passing a test, if you are genuinely interested in enjoying that learning process, it's so much easier.
Yeah.
Right. Amen. So I think we need to bring that back to the educational process. And I don't know, there's probably the whole college education system is a complex thing and can't fix it overnight, but
yeah, I agree.
We can try.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. I think for anyone, learning how to cultivate a love of wisdom, a love of learning outside of the college environment is extremely important. So, I mean, it's not that it just can be done only in the college environment, you know, but I think it's a great setting to try and do that. Definitely, I think I'm definitely pro college, but anyway, I'll just put this in. I think it's ridiculously expensive. Why we have to spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, that is beyond me, but I'm not the expert.
Yeah. And that's, I guess, the other thing is, like, you know, my business degree, I studied economics, and sometimes the payoff of some of these degrees, it's just like, why would you spend all that money when it's for a degree that's not strictly necessary?
Yeah. Well, there it is the framing right there in your statement, is that college, you go to college for the economics degree. Like, I'm going to think about how ingrained that is in the way that we talk to one another. Oh, what are you going to school for? Oh, engineering.
Right.
You know, and like, well, yeah, but what about all these other things that you're going to learn, and, you know, how you're going to develop, and, you know, friends you're going to make, and, you know, all this, like, I just feel like we allow ourselves to, you know, listen to this message.
Yeah.
when that's the type of talk that goes on.
And maybe I need to think more about, okay, what, you know, for my own college experience, what the money invested in it was not in the degree. Mm-hmm. You know, it was in that 4 years of life experience. Even if it wasn't, you know, maybe there's a cheaper way to get comparable life experience and education. That's a different conversation maybe than is college in general worth it?
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Good point.
All right. Well, we got to wrap this baby up, I think. I think we covered our last question of, you know, what would make college worth it. I think that some of those right circumstances, you know, being surrounded by good people, you know, obviously consider major, right? If you're a high schooler listening to this or you're thinking about going back to college, right? Do think about the major, right? Because some majors are strictly necessary for the job you want to do. You know, others maybe won't actually result in what you think it'll result in. So that's important. And I think cost is just something, I don't know. Debt is not a good thing. I think we can all more or less be on a similar page with that. Like, you don't want debt. And I think those are just pragmatic concerns about college ultimately.
No, I'm with you. Yeah.
I guess the last thing I'll mention, we talked about the College of St. Joseph, the new college in Steubenville.
Not on the podcast, I don't think. No, okay. You've told me about it, though, and I've heard about it.
I think this is a really – has a lot of potential to be a good solution to some of these problems we talked about. The College of St. Joseph, it's open next fall in Steubenville. It's really just kind of a lot of what we've been talking about. It's basically a marriage between a trade school and a liberal arts education where you can go and get – this training in ways of thinking, learning what it means to be human and to think about the big questions in life, but also that kind of direct practical training in these trades. So you can learn more about them, look them up at College of St. Joseph,
cool.
Steubenville, Ohio.
Yeah, really good stuff.
All right, well, let's rock and roll out of this podcast. Praise be Jesus Christ.
Now and forever.